Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Saturday, 25th September, recording at 6:53 p.m. Still British Summer Time. Now, recording on Saturday, that's because this is a replacement audio. I found out today that my recording on Saturday was silent, and the reason for that, I was perplexing at first, but a cable from my computer to my overall speaker set had been pulled open. So here I am again, a recording. I can remember the audio that I did on Friday, but I can also update it because the markets are closed, and I have the additional advantage of seeing what developed on late in the session on Friday. But first, because this is the big picture long-term outlook audio for the week, let me first do a quick review of the week, as I usually do. In global stock markets, it was mostly a week of consolidation. The leaders, such as the ASEAN group, South American, leading South American markets, remained very firm throughout this week of consolidation. And Europe and Wall Street, with the help of Wall Street especially, had pretty much a blockbuster ending to the week, with the S&P and the NASDAQ up over 2%. And we had gains in Europe of up to 2% on Friday. So that was a very positive outlook overall. Now, again, there was a little bit more favorable data in the USA after some disappointing data. I don't want to get hung up on the statistics du jour in here, but it shows that this market can still rise on strong data, and that it can absorb the blow, so far at any rate, of some disappointing data. But other market areas, for the long dated government bond market, prices had rallied throughout the week but were hit on Friday. Now, that's the US and European government bond prices. The JGBs remained quite firm throughout the week, and are up near their former highs, which looks like a resistance area to me. More on this when I complete the review. The dollar is still weak, and it's still weak against the yen, or the yen strong against the dollar at 84.21 yen to the dollar. Now, big stories here. First, precious metals have been very steady for most of the week, and we saw a little backing off late in the day on Friday, with gold having touched 1300, closing at 1295.95, so nearly 1296. But it's a steady market overall. The industrial metals have been stronger still. Copper closing out at 361.80. That's very good. The tin has continued to lead industrial metals to the upside. And in the commodities, let's say take crude oil first for the agricultural commodities. Crude oil, which had been ranging, had been under a little bit of pressure for much of the week, but then rebounded on Thursday and Friday, and closed the week at 76.49, for that's NYMEX crude. Sugar remains firm, as it's been all along, but the really big story during the week was one of consolidation for the grains and beans until Friday, and then a surge. And we've seen corn rally straight back up to its recent highs, and soybeans extend an advance to the upside. We also saw lumber go limit up on Friday, although it's a very small limit overall. Okay, so what's going on here with all these markets? Well, as far as stock markets are concerned, we have a short-term overbought condition, as I had mentioned in my well, pretty much in all the audios during the week. I didn't do all the audios, but Owen had mentioned it as well up through Friday. And I'm awfully glad that I didn't open any short positions, because I did say, you remember, we had the downside key day reversals a week ago on Friday, and then we that didn't get any follow through to the downside. Those are in the European stock markets, but no follow through to the downside. And then a little bit of additional weakening in Wednesday and Thursday, but then these big upward dynamics in here today. Now, we are still technically overbought, so we could see a little bit of a consolidation still. Whether that occurs, I think Monday will be a firm start at minimum. But the point is that having this short-term overbought condition, there's still a possibility that we get some ranging and a small pullback. But I think the evidence that we saw on Friday, the strength that we saw on Friday, supports my hypothesis mentioned earlier in the week that a consolidation was most likely to be relatively shallow, that the technical action had really been very good. Now, again, this is the big picture long-term outlook, so let me go further out on this. I would say that the move that we've seen in September is, and it actually started earlier for most Fuller Money themes, a month or two earlier, but I would say the technical action is a very elegant riposte, a very emphatic riposte, to those who say, no, we're in a bear market, and that stock markets are going to see a very significant correction, and some are still forecasting that they will that the S&P will break below 1,000, and well, out on the fringe extreme, we've got people who are talking the Dow down to 400. Well, needless to say, go through the charts, have a look. There's no evidence of that whatsoever. What we do have plenty evidence of, though, is that led by the Fuller Money themes, again, those Asian emerging, I prefer to say progressing markets, the South American progressing markets, they have just continued to push higher for the most part. The only exception to that is the China A-share market, which is well, has been hit since July of 2009 with supply in the form of world record IPOs. Now, that's a well-known story, and I've mentioned it continuously in here. And there is still some a not insignificant supply calendar, which carries on into November before lightening once again. But that's caused China to lag behind. But the silver lining in that, for anyone who's interested in China, is that valuations have continued to improve as a consequence of supply weighing on the market. And we have some of the most attractive valuations in China that we've had since 2005, when it last took off on a very powerful run to the upside. So I think that looks quite attractive, and I would expect China to be higher by year-end, and more importantly, I think it'll have a very good year in 2011. Now, a number of the front-running progressing markets are overextended relative to their trend means represented by the 200-day moving averages. Therefore, they are susceptible to some mean reversion, but I am not tempted to sell. When I do sell, and those markets, which are core positions in my own personal portfolio, I certainly want to do it against the background of surging markets. And we have seen that with Thailand, which I have a Thai fund in my portfolio, with India. But the valuations are not scary. They're on the higher side of average, but they're certainly not bubble territory overall, and I have to weigh up the recent strength against the background of what was a considerably long ranging period, an earlier mean reversion phase, which really lasted at least 6 months for some of the leaders, and 9 months and up to a year. So I think India basically moved sideways for about a year. So the technical underpinnings are really quite good, and that causes me to want to stay with the markets at this stage. Also, what makes a bull market? And I would say we want to have very accommodative monetary policy. You know my mantra on this, that monetary policy trumps most other factors most of the time. Interest rates have been moving up in India and other countries with booming economies, but they're still negative relative to the rates of inflation. So they're still, in other words, short-term interest rates are below the rates of inflation, and that is a positive environment for these global stock markets. One of the reasons why those rates have not moved up faster is because these countries, despite their strong growth, they're concerned about the weakness of the U.S. economy and the European economies. And they also know that interest rates remain at rock bottom lows in Europe and North America, or in the U.S. part of North America. And therefore, they know that if they were to raise interest rates further too quickly, that would cause their currencies to soar. And this is an environment in which nobody wants, no country wants a strong currency, as I've said on so many occasions. But some countries need weak currencies more than most. The ones that need a weak currency most does not include India and these other favorite fuller money themes, but their currencies have been really quite firm in here. And for a sterling based investor such as myself, or for US dollar based investors, that's good news, because we're being protected against the general softness in our own currencies by the strength that we see not only in these fuller money themed stock markets, but also in the currencies of those countries. Okay, so I think that still looks like quite an attractive picture, and I think the technical evidence is very much in line with my feeling that we would see quite a decent fourth quarter for global stock markets. And the only thing that would perhaps undermine that a little bit, well, there are two factors that I can think of, but one of them would be if stock markets continue to do so well in September. We don't have that many more days of September, but if they roar into October and more markets get overextended, with the Western markets, for instance, pushing back up to their April highs or more. And my goodness, have a look at the NASDAQ index. All this talk of a depression in the United States a secular bear market that people have been saying about the United States. Well, have a look at the NASDAQ. That's very close to its April high. So I think the environment looks favorable, but if I did mention in the beginning of this stock market review that we do have a short-term overbought condition, that can be consolidated in tight ranges as we saw last week. But if we get markets surging ahead too fast, that will leave them a little bit more susceptible to further mean reversion. But that's a minor risk. That's not something that worries me overly. What worries me much more, and it's something that I don't think anybody else is talking about other than Owen and myself, but we see commodity price inflation building quite rapidly. The industrial commodities are strong again, save for oil. Oil's not weak, but it's not strong either. It's range bound, but it has a pattern that looks not unlike a good many of the European and well, in the U.S. stock market indices. Pre their September rallies. So it's right smack in the middle of a trading range here. And if we were to see oil break out to the upside, well, I'll rephrase that. I'll say when we see oil break out to the upside, that will ring or should ring a few more alarm bells for investors. So commodity price inflation is more than just a possibility. The evidence is mounting. Copper surging, tin surging, other metals very firm. Gold up to $1,300. That's the least important of these inflation signs. The surge that we saw in the grain and bean complex. Have a look at charts of corn and soybeans, and they're all rising. Oats, rough rice, wheat is still in a consolidation of its earlier very, very strong gains. But if that continues due to reduced crops or fear of reduced crops due to adverse weather conditions, that could cause quite an inflationary problem. Remember, we had food riots in a number of countries in 2008. Now, we're a long way off from that today, but it wouldn't take too many more weeks, such as, or too many more days, even, such as we saw on Friday, to cause greater concern. Over the possibility of food price inflation. So watch for this story to move from the back pages of the financial press to front pages. And when it becomes a front page item on general information newspapers, then certainly the awareness of the problem will be considerable. Now, why is this serious? Well, first, everybody's been talking about deflation, and you have so many people who just automatically say, particularly when talking about Europe and the United States, they say, well, there's absolutely no inflation there. Well, there's certainly no wage inflation. There isn't any property inflation either. We don't have property deflation, we have property disinflation, I would argue, coming down from an overinflated level. We have deflation in terms of wages, a bit of it at any rate, and certainly the high unemployment levels are deflationary. But we have the real specter with a weak dollar of seeing an increase in food price inflation, and the bond markets are not prepared for that, or bond investors, I should say, are not prepared for that, in my opinion, because certainly no one has been talking about it, and that would come as a shock. And the net effect, I think, would be one of stagflation. In other words, a slow growth to stagnant economy, but yet food price inflation rearing up. We don't have much inflation in manufactured goods due to the very considerable competition that we've seen from China and all the other progressing emerging economies. But if we continue to see resources prices move higher, metal prices, and again I mentioned crude, as and when that breaks up out of its range and moves up to $90-$100 or more, then you can be certain that cost prices will rise in this manufacturing sector, and we're also seeing some sharp wage hikes in China, as you know. So that's what does concern me. I would say today we are still in a sweet spot as far as equities are concerned. Short-term interest rates are very low. The Fed is pumping tons of liquidity into the U.S. economy. Bernanke repeating that growth is still too slow, and that's code. Those are code words for saying that I'm going to buy either more bonds or some other form of stimulus, and certainly print more money. And a lot of that liquidity that's being pumped in, well, what happens to when the money's sloshing around the system? It goes to where it gets the best return. And that will certainly be Fuller Money theme stock markets, but it's also spread to broader stock markets. Now, a lot of Americans are saying, well, how could the stock market possibly go up when everybody's talking about a bear market and a depression even? And just to quote Russell Napier once again, but I've said the same thing, only less bluntly for some time, it's not about the economy, stupid. That's the Napier quote. And then Russell Napier, fine strategist at CLSA. The point is that you don't buy the economy, you buy equities. And the U.S. leading multinationals, which we continue to like, are doing extremely well because they're leveraged to the global economy. And that means, and the bigger population areas of the global economy are booming. So we have two different worlds here, really. The disinflationary pressures and deflationary fears that we have in the West, and the confidence on the rise in the East, but also inflationary pressures there already. And it doesn't take too much imagination to appreciate that if we get the U.S. trying to devalue the dollar further, because the weak dollar has been a factor, but it's not the whole story, certainly, in terms of this demand for commodities. But a soft dollar, a strong growth among the progressing economies, and as Western economies do pick up further down the road, and I think they will by, if not 2011, by at some point in 2012, 2013. Just think what that might do to commodity prices overall. So there are problems. There are always problems to contend with or that lie in the future. And the one that does concern me, as I've said, is commodity price inflation. And that will hit bond markets harder than it hits equities. And that needs to be borne in mind, I think. So I think bonds are highly risky today. We saw U.S. Treasuries and European bond futures weakening on Friday. I think the rally is overextended and quite possibly over, and that we'll see bond prices come down and bond yields range sideways to higher. And I think bond yields, long-dated government bond yields, will go significantly higher over the longer term. What about corporate bonds? And those have been very popular with the baby boomer generation investors. Well, you know, when companies are issuing 100-year debt. And when companies without top credit ratings and paying what are really quite low interest rates, especially for 100-year debt, I think I'm just don't hold me to the exact figure, but I think it was about 5.8 or 5.9%. One company I commented on it at the time earlier in the month issuing 100-year debt. Then you've got a company with a very strong balance sheet, Microsoft, but it's lining up some major borrowing, not because they need the cash to finance their operations, these companies, but because cash is so cheap. Now, if cash is so cheap to borrow for these companies, and if they're interested in selling these long-dated bonds because the yields are so low that they regard that as very attractive, isn't that also telling you that they expect those yields to go up in future? I certainly think so. And if that's the case, do we really want to be buying these corporate bonds? Well, I certainly don't. So again, I don't like that sector, as you know. What about precious metals? Well, it's steady as she goes here. I think that we're unlikely to get these markets accelerating higher. I expect that to happen at some stage, but probably not in the near term. But they are quite firm generally, and I think this means that any investor who's got a core position, an unleveraged core position in gold bullion, or the shares, and I think the gold bullion is the better investment. It's certainly the safer investment, and they need not worry as long as the price action for bullion is to the left of that rising 200-day moving average, and it's comfortably to the left of it without being overextended, and as long as the Gold Bugs Index is doing the same, in other words, trending upwards or ranging to the left of its rising 200-day moving average. Meanwhile, gold, having touched that 1300 level, that was a target that I had mentioned many months ago, when this move, this medium-term move, which actually began in September of 2009, started to develop. Now, gold has done the last $50 without my participation, and because I took profits in my gold shares and also came out of bullion, which I'd been trading on the long side for 9, 10 years, quite actively. Not because I don't like them, but I do have some concerns that everybody seems to be bullish. So I don't know anyone who's actually bearish of gold. So it's a bit of a crowded trade. I don't think it's an overvalued trade, but it is a bit of a crowded trade. And I've said in recent weeks that the grain and bean complex is currently my gold proxy. And the key difference, though, as I must point out, is that precious metals, gold and other precious metals, are in secular bull markets. That's something we've talked about over the last decade, whereas these grains and beans are experiencing a cyclical recovery. And on that note, I think I've covered all the bases, at least the ones that I wanted to. I can't wait to see what happens on Monday. This is an interesting time in the markets, and there are a lot of people out there who say they actually like the emerging progressing markets, but they're not there. They've been hoping about pullbacks. It represents a fairly significant source of fuel for the next 6 months or so. And on that note, all the best to all of you, and again, apologies for the delay on the posting of this audio.